I want to go back to Acts 18 again. And as I was talking to Ronnie a little earlier tonight, I realized that having looked at this several years ago, two or three different times in since 1971, which is a long time ago, and come talking about time, we moved into our house that I live in now the day before Halloween will be 45 years, which is next week. Mm-hmm. That's 6 days from now. And it don't seem like it's been 45 years, but it certainly has. And there's some things that I've looked at here that got involved with. And I had a companion Bible for a long, long time, but, you know, sometimes it seems like that they were just things that I didn't either didn't understand or didn't look up or something when we were going through this beforehand, some. But here we go tonight, and I'm going to pick up with Acts 18, and I'm going to read verse 9, 10, and 11, because this is what we ended with in our study last week. Last time, and it is really a wonderful, beautiful thing that we are able to do it and to get something out of it each and every time that we go there. And so, let's just go back and our list of people, excuse me, is growing a little bit that we find their name of in Scripture, according to having to deal with Paul. And this is on his journey into Asia Minor. And so we'll just pick it back up with verse 9, and we get down to verse 12, and that'll give us today's start. And it says, and let me just read it out of the King James. It says, "Then spake the Lord to Paul in the night by a vision." And this is what it said: "Be not afraid, but speak and hold not thy peace." And then in verse 10, it says, And this is the Lord speaking to Paul continually, and this is the answer to verse 9. And he says, "For I am with thee, and no man shall set on thee to hurt thee, full stop. And it says, "For I have much people in this city." And verse 11 says this: "And he continued there a year and 6 months, teaching the word of God among them." And so God, the Lord, had give Paul a little breather, I think, from these things that we had been talking about. And and I had kind of forgotten where we had got to as far as the it says that Silas and Timotheus had come from Macedonia, and they were back with Paul again there, and Paul had been waiting on them in Athens, Greece. And Paul was teaching Jesus that he was the Christ, And these people opposed themselves to a point where they got really worked up, got in a battle array or ready for the fray, it says. And Paul says, I'm gonna leave you. I'm gonna move on. And he says, your blood be upon your own heads. And this was put for man himself. So, he said, I'll go to the Gentiles. And so Paul departed. And he said, and he entered into a certain man's house named Justice. And so we talked about it a little bit and said it reads in other places, maybe Titus or Titius. It says, whose house joined hard to the synagogues. And then in 8th verse, you get a chief ruler of the synagogue, which name was Crispus. And so we're getting a pretty good little run of people that were there. And of course, Paul had met Aquila and Priscilla. And after he got at Corinth. And so we've got their names listed here too, also in so we've gone through quite a few people, fixing to go through some more right now in just a minute. And so this was the respite that the Lord was going to give Paul in a night as he spoke to him in a vision or a horoma, which equals to a sight, so he could see the sight. And it said, Acts 7:30 will give you another answer to things like this. But he's told him to be not afraid and not to hold his peace. Do not be silent. And so the answer to that, as I said a while ago, is says, I am Meta with thee, and no man or no one shall set on thee or lay hold or hands on thee to hurt thee or do thee evil. Full stop. For I have much people in the Greek, that is the word laos, in the city of Corinth. And Corinth here is used generally, so I assume that the area of Corinth was more than just a city. It was a general area. And he, Paul, by this permission, continued, literally, sat there, and has been added, or he was there a year and 6 months. And this was AD 52 and 53, teaching the word of God among the Greek word among there is the word in them. And during this period of time, Paul wrote 1 Thessalonians in AD 52 and 2 Thessalonians in AD 53 and probably the book of Hebrews. So you get this extra information there. Now we get with our study tonight. And I'm not sure that I can really give it to you in a way that it's been given in the notes there, and because it's it's quite a lot of notes that goes along with verse 12. And so we've got another one here that we've got to add to the names. That's Galileo. Literally, Galileo being proconsul. So he's part of the group of people that does the judging in Asia Minor. And Galileo was an unusual person. And I didn't realize that until I got involved with the notes this time, because I don't remember that the last time. And it might have been quite a long while ago, because I didn't try to go back and look at some of my other stuff that I had, because I've got a lot of it now over the period of 55 years or so. 58 years now.
It's been a while.
Yeah. So it's been a while. A lot of water has been under the bridge. And it says that when Galileo, the proconsul, and it says this is just another instance of Luke's accuracy of the book of Acts. Okay? It says that Galileo was the deputy of Achaia, A-C-H-A-I-A. And Achaia was a senatorial province under Augustus, the imperial under Tiberius, but after AD 44, it was restored by Claudius to the Senate and therefore governed by a proconsul, which was Galileo, brother of Seneca. Okay, so we got another name there, and I'm not sure that Paul got to know him, but I assume that he did. And he says, who was Nero's tutor? So he had tutored Nero, and we all know what Nero done. He burnt Rome. And it said of Galileo, brother of Seneca, who was Nero's tutor, said to be an amicable man and gracious also. But the Jews made insurrection with one accord against Paul. So his year and a half hiatus of being kind of his own man for a while rose up against Paul, and if you look up the Greek word, it is epihistomai, and that equals an assault in the English. And he brought him to the judgment seat, or the bema. That's what they call a judgment seat, or a throne area, if you will. In the Athenian courts, they were two other platforms, or two other bemas, one for the accuser and one for the accused. So they had a court set up for them that way. And so when they brought Paul there before the bema, then Galileo was dealing with Paul face to face in that situation. And
so they had their plaintiff and defendant places already.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
It was a place of court. It was a
patterned a lot after that.
House of court, yeah. And so all of this were given to us, and the notes, and there were quite a lot of it was given to us in the notes the Companion Bible, and I didn't remember that.
So a good thing, I don't know if you know it or not, because you're never looking at the computer, but one good thing is Chip can actually post the notes out of the Companion Bible on here, too.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we're kind of reading them as you are, as well, okay. So it really helps.
Okay, verse 13. So, and they are still talking about Paul saying, this fellow, or this one, persuadeth, and persuadeth in the Greek is anapiatho. He persuadeth men. And men there in the Greek, is anthropos. To worship God, contrary, and contrary in the Greek is the word para, against the law. Contrary to the law or against the law. And so this was this little short clips in there in these verses to kind of give you the understanding of, or a picture kind of what's going on. And the Companion Bible says, and I'll just read it at the 14 out of there, and when Paul was now about to open his mouth, Gallio said unto the Jews, if it were a matter of wrong or wicked lewdness, O ye Jews, reason would that I should not bear with you full stop. He said, I'm going somewhere I don't want to get involved in. I don't want to get involved in this way. So when you look at 14 there, it says, and when Paul was about, and the word in there that you omit would be now because it has been added by the translator, about to open his mouth, and that Greek is a figure of adiomai, and that's a Hebrews in figure 6 of the appendices. Gallio said unto the Hebrews, if it were a matter of wrong or an injustice, and in the Greek, and I hope I get it right, is radio gmai. And that's a wrong or an injustice. And lewdness there is recklessness, equals recklessness in the English. And Gallio said, O ye Jews, reason would. And that is according to the Greek kata, which means logos, that I should equal, I would, that I would or should bear with you, full stop. So he's going somewhere that he feels like that the Jews ought to take care of their own problem. And,
he's basically saying this ain't about anything that bothers our court.
Our group.
This is all about you and your law and your religion and all that.
And what you're doing. Yeah. Exactly. That's it. And 15 kind of gets involved in that too. So, he's made the point here. He's there in his place. And he's made the point, and it's like, well, you guys need to take care of this yourself. I don't need to get involved in this.
It's a personal matter.
Yeah, but now it changes just a little bit. And it says in 15, and I'll read 15 too, it says, but if it be a question of words and names and of your law, look ye into it. He says, for I will be no judge of such, and matters have been added to it there. So he says, if it be a question, in the Greek, it's zeti and entma, peri, words, logos, and names, and of your law, and the note says something like the law that is with or in you, look ye to it. And if you're following the law, or if it's written in you or your heart, like I've heard that it is, okay, look into it yourself. You do it yourself. You got the ability to do it. Look ye yourselves to it. He said, for I will be no judge. And the Greek word for that is, or the will, and the Greek word is boulomai, of such matters. And so he just tells them right straight out that this is your problem. You take care of it. But it didn't end there. It kind of went on, because these people, some of them seem to be nuts. And he, Gallio, drave, and that means to drive out. And the Greek there is apla, you know. He drave them, apla, you know, from the judgment seat. Or the bema. And the note says that they probably persisted to their charges, and so the lictors were ordered to clear the court. Well, a lictor is like a bailiff that we have in our court system here in America, and the bailiff takes care of everything of misgivings or misunderstandings or all the things that can come up in arguments that the judge don't stop right quick. So that this was what the lictors did, and they were ordered to clear the court. So they have every right to do that. They got to keep decorum in their court of law. And so with this, you see, Gallio, he's trying his best to get away from all this. He just don't want to hear anymore of this. And they keep bringing it up, keep going. And it says in verse 17 says this, then, or at that time, all the Greeks took Sosthenes, and here's another one, and he's the chief ruler of the synagogue, and beat him before the judgment seat. I guess it's the 39 stripes. I didn't look at it that, but I'm sure that's that's what had happened. And it said, and Gallio cared for none of these things.
Matter to
him. Yes. It is, I guess he just sat there and watched it.
Well, these people are, they're captive people, and they're fighting among themselves. Yeah. So
This is
entertainment for him.
Yeah. So, they were driven from the judgment seat. And verse 17 says, then or at that time, all the Greeks, or they all, included, I guess, Sosthenes, the chief ruler of the synagogue. He had apparently succeeded Crispus. And if you want to look it up, Crispus is mentioned in 1 Corinthians 1:1 and verse, or one, maybe verses 1 through 8 there, I'm not sure. And beat him before the Bema. And it says, see the note on that. And Gallio cared none for these things and said, see note on that. So let's look at that through our notes and see what we have here. Let's see. Yeah, when it talked about beat there, the crowd to whom the Jews were obnoxious would be glad to second the work of the lictors, or they wanted to get into it with them, I guess, at that point. And then Gallio, literally, none of these things was a concern to him. He refused to interfere in behalf of some troublesome litigants. And so,
yeah, like I said, he ain't got no nickels in that dime. No, he didn't want to get involved. And he's sitting back and enjoying the show.
Yeah.
But he don't want them to do it in his court.
Yeah, yeah. Because this is, yeah, he could get them from being unruly in his court of law. I guess it works out that way. And so you get down to 18, and 18 is kind of a two-part verse. And the first part of it, and it said that Paul tarried after this. But it says, and Paul after this tarried there yet a good while, many days. That's the first part of 18. Tarried there is stayed on prosimino, is mean stayed on, and a good while there is to be established as many days. And then for the rest of the verse in 18, and it goes on through 19:12, and they are getting involved in going to Ephesus and extended the tour in Asia Minor. And so this rest of this verse 18 through 23 is Paul's ministry at Ephesus and elsewhere. And then 24 through 28 deals with Apollos and Achaia. And then there's a two-part to this ministry at Ephesus because there's been a vow taken here. And that vow cannot be cleaned or cleaned up unless you go to Jerusalem to take care of it at a certain time of the year. So Paul has taken a vow. And there's quite a lot to that vow being taken. It is a Nazarite vow. You can read that in
the notes in the CD have a lot on that, I believe.
Well, I got it marked in my Bible.
Comes out of Numbers. The vow is described in the book of Numbers. I think it's, I can't remember the chapter.
Yeah, 5, 6.
Yeah, Numbers 6.
Chapter 6. Okay, but let's go on with 18. And it says, Paul was there with them yet many days, and then took his leave of the brethren and sailed thence into Syria, and with him Priscilla and Aquila, having shorn his head in Caesarea, full stop, for he had a vow. Now, so Paul left there in Ephesus and sailed thence to Syria with Priscilla and Aquila, but they just go to the next place and stay. They don't go with Paul, because after he's taken this vow, he has, in a certain allotted time, to go to Jerusalem and go before the high priest there, evidently, and get his business taken care of with this vow. So let me read the rest of 18. And it said, Paul tarried yet a good while, many days. Paul stayed on, in the Greek, that is prosmeno. And when he took his leave of the brethren and sailed thence into Syria, his ministry with Ephesus elsewhere, and with him Priscilla and Aquila, having shorn his head, and that word shorn there is the word kiaru, which means to shear. Well, that's not all. When he goes to take the vow, that's not all he had. He had to clean his head completely, and his face, or his whole head, if you look at it. And so he had to shave also, which is called X-U-R-A-O. I don't know how you pronounce the X. Is that Z?
What was Zureo?
Huh?
Zureo.
Zureo. Yeah, that's what I thought. Because generally, with an X in something, if it's dealing with mankind or dealing with an affliction or whatever, it's generally a Z that's pronounced with that. So, Zureo, which means to shave his face, which is also part of his head, in Caesarea, full stop. For he had a vow, or a usici, and it says to read the note in my notes. So where it says vow there, usici, page 134-21, only year, 21-23. And James 5:15. It has been questioned whether these words referred to Paul or to Aquila. The fact points to Paul, for whichever it was, the ceremonies connected with the vow could only be completed at Jerusalem. And while Paul was hastening his journey thither, or to Jerusalem, Aquila appears to have remained at Ephesus in verse 26. So, evidently it didn't affect Aquila or Priscilla, either one. It was just Paul that needed to go. So, there's a... that gives you a little view of what was going on here with them, because Paul had been staying with Aquila and Priscilla in Corinth because they were tent makers, and Paul was a tent maker also, and when he met them, he took up his residence with them as following the thing that he had been trained to do as a kid. And to take this hair and all from these hides and all this and make tents out of it. And evidently it's part of the stuff that Paul had made his cloak out of when he asked Timothy to bring his cloak when he come to see Paul, because that was what the shepherds used to keep themselves dry when they were out with the sheep in bad weather. And I don't know where Paul had ever dealt with any sheep or not, but evidently he must have made him a coat sometime. If he needed a coat, then he had something that was waterproof. And so that gives us a little more understanding about that. Because, now, it don't tell us a whole lot about the vow. So if we want to read that, we need to go back to Numbers 6. And maybe while we're talking about it, maybe it might be a good thing to... go ahead and look at it. I've got 15 minutes, and it'll take about that long to do it. So, here we go. What did I say? Number 6? Yeah. I think I lost my little... No, here it is. Let me just swap places with it. So. Okay. If you have a companion Bible, Numbers chapter 6 of Numbers is on page 187. And so we need to look at this a little bit to see what a vow is, what it entails. And it's pretty elaborate little thing here, so let's go ahead and get involved in it. And it said, "And the Lord spoke unto Moses, saying," speaking to the children of Israel, "and say unto them, when either man or woman shall separate themselves to vow." Okay. To vow a vow, the figure. Call a proton, for emphasis, to make a special vow. A Nazarite, one separate from the Hebrew Nazara, to separate. Dealing with Genesis 4. 49:26, Judges 13, and dealing with some of these other things. So let's just go ahead and read it. So, speaking to the children of Israel and saving them, either man or woman shall separate themselves to vow a vow of the Nazarite to separate themselves unto the Lord. Well, I guess the woman wouldn't have to do the shaving of her face. But at least she would have to take the hair off of her head. Okay. He shall separate himself from wine and strong drink, and shall drink no vinegar of wine or vinegar of strong drink, neither shall he drink any liquor of grapes, nor eat moist grapes or dried grapes. Grapes ain't there, but yep. Whether the grapes be moist or dry.
Yep. No okay. Raisins either.
Or raisins, yeah. So to speak. Yeah. Because, and it said, all the days of his separation shall he eat nothing that is made of the vine tree, from the kernels even to the husk. And all the days of the vow of his separation, there shall no razor come upon his head until the days be fulfilled in which he separateth himself unto the Lord. He shall be holy and shall let the locks of his hair of his head grow. All the days that he has separated himself unto the Lord, he shall come at no dead body. He don't matter who it is, okay. He shall not make himself unclean for his father, or for his mother, or for his brother, or father or sister, when they die.
Wow.
Or if they die. And that's full stop.
Yeah, even if you lose a member of your immediate family, you still get
there. You don't go. Okay. Because the consecration of his God is upon his head. And all the days of his separation, he is holy unto the Lord. And if any man die very suddenly by him, and he hath defiled the head of his consecration, then he shall shave his head in the day of his cleansing. On the seventh day shall he shave it. So, if he happens to be with somebody, if they just die, and he's there, then there's a provision made for that. And on the eighth day he shall bring two turtle doves, two young pigeons, to the priest, to the door of the tabernacle. Now this is the roll-up church that they had going with them, of the congregation, again, full stop. Now, verse 11, and the priest shall offer the one for a sin offering and the other for a burnt offering and make an atonement for him, for that he sinned by the dead, and shall hallow his head that same day. Hallow his head by starting anew with the vow. And he shall consecrate unto the Lord the day of his separation, and shall bring a lamb of the first year for a trespass offering. But the day that were before shall be lost, because his separation was defiled. And this is the law of the Nazarite. When the day of his separations are fulfilled, full stop. And he shall be brought unto the door of the tabernacle of the congregation, full stop. And he shall offer his offering unto the Lord one he-lamb of the first year without blemish for a burnt offering, and one ewe-lamb, or a female lamb, of the first year without blemish for a sin offering, and one ram without blemish for a peace offering. And a basket of unleavened bread cakes, of fine flour mingled with oil, and wafers of unleavened bread anointed with oil, and their meat offering and their drink offerings. And the priest shall bring them before the Lord, and shall offer his sin offering and his burnt offering full stop. And he shall offer the ram for a sacrifice of peace offering unto the Lord with a basket of unleavened bread. And the priest shall offer also his meat offering and his drink offering. And the Nazarite shall shave the head of his separation at the door of the tabernacle of the congregation, and shall take the hair of the head of his separation and put it in the fire which is under the sacrifice of the peace offering. We go, they're cooking it, boiling it. Mm-hmm. And the priest shall take the sodden shoulders of the ram, and one unleavened cake out of the basket, and one unleavened wafer, and shall put them upon the hands of the Nazarite after the hair of his separation is shaven full stop. And the priest shall wave them for a wave offering before the Lord full stop. And this is holy for the priest, with the wave breast and the heave shoulder full stop. And after that, the Nazarite may drink wine. I guess if you went through all that, you're probably ready for a drink of wine. This is the law of the Nazarite who hath vowed, and of his offering unto the Lord for his separation. Beside that, that his hand shall get. Full stop. According to the vow which he had vowed, so that he must do after the law of his separation. And the Lord spoke unto Moses, saying, speak unto Aaron and to his son, saying, on this wise ye shall bless the children of Israel, saying unto them, the Lord bless thee and keep thee, full stop. And the Lord make his face to shine upon thee and be gracious unto thee, full stop. The Lord lift up his countenance upon thee and give thee peace. And they shall put my name upon the children of Israel, and I will bless them. So, this is the vow, and it goes on until, I guess they make a specific time to, when your hair grows back out and your beard comes back.
That's what I wondered. It never really set a set specific time.
No.
I wonder if that was...
Well, it's you have to be there on a feast day in Jerusalem. And it may go to the next feast day. I'm not sure.
Yeah, not either.
But... See, they knew about it, and so I don't know why Paul felt that he needed to do this. I mean, maybe that was part of the vision that he saw.
I found my answer in 1 Corinthians.
Did you?
To that question, yeah. I think you read 1 chapters, 1 Corinthians. He gets into it and tells them, he basically tells them that he would have done anything for Israel to convince them, and I think he did it. He did it as a show of how, of his Jewishness so that it would, his message would carry more.
He was always looking to the brother.
Yep.
To get all the brother or to get brother to believe.
Yeah, that one bothered me for a long time until I read that. I have to find where it is. I'll look for it while you finish up. But it's in, I'm thinking it was in 1 Corinthians, first few chapters, 1 Corinthians.
Well, it said over there to look at Corinthians, 1 Corinthians 1:1.
That's.
And then look at verse 8, I believe. So, had so much going on, and I didn't know when I went to look at this, and I said, oh, this is going to take a little while to get through this. So, but that was the rest part, the rest of, part of verse 18 of the 18th verse of the 18th chapter of the book of Acts. That was where he had the bow. Now, you found it yet?
No, go ahead. I'm still looking.
Okay. About out of time.
You're about out of time.
But I'll read 19. And it says, and he came to Ephesus, and he left them there. This was Aquila and Priscilla. And he left them there, but he himself entered into the synagogue and reasoned with the Jews. And they desired him to tarry a longer time with them. But he consented not, because he had to be at Jerusalem at a certain time.
Right.
Okay. But bade them farewell, saying, I must by all means keep this feast that cometh in or to Jerusalem, but I will return again unto you if God will, and he sailed from Ephesus. See, so he had to do it in a specific time. So he had a vow, and he just couldn't stay with them. So he left Priscilla and Aquila and Caesarea, and he was going on to Ephesus and then on to Jerusalem. And he had to be in Jerusalem at a certain time frame. So that's what I understood it to be. So I'm out of time, but did you find what you wanted to read?
No, I did. So in 1 Corinthians 9, he says, maybe you'll start at 16. He says, For though I preach the gospel, I have nothing to glory of, for necessity is laid upon me. Yea, woe is unto me if I preach not the gospel. For if I do this thing willingly, I have a reward, but if against my will a dispensation of the gospel is committed unto me. What's my reward then? Verily, that when I preach the gospel, I may make the gospel of Christ without charge, that I abuse not my power in the gospel. He said, but for though I be free from all men, yet have I made myself servant unto all, that I might gain the more. And unto the Jews I become as a Jew, that I might gain the Jews. To them that are under the law, as under the law, that I might gain them that are under the law. To them that are without the law, as without the law, being not without the law to God, but under the law to Christ, that I might gain them that are without the law. To the weak became I as weak, that I might gain the weak. I am made all things to all men, that I might by all means save some. And this, he said, I do for the gospel's sake, that I might be partaker thereof with you. And then he goes into running the race, and all run the race, but only one receives the prize. So I believe he was at a point in his life there where he tells him, under the Jews I become as a Jew. And there was almost no more Jewish thing that he could do than to take that Nazarite vow to convince them that he was sincere in his preaching of Christ, you know. Even though he taught the Gentiles that they didn't have to be under the law. See, I think most of the problem with Paul come when Jews heard his Gentile message. Because he would tell the Gentiles, you just need to do it by faith. You don't have to worry about the law.
Yeah.
And that's what the whole question of Acts 15 was. Well, they got to be circumcised, so they got to keep the law. They got to do this, they got to do that. And Paul said, no, it's only the four things.
Yeah.
But they were turning his message away because of maybe hearing the wrong message at times. Yeah. And I think he literally done that to prove he was a Jew of the Jews. To me, that was my answer.
Yeah.
For the whole vow thing.
Yeah. Well, if...
I didn't mean to run over there.
So. No, that's all right. But the fact is that if he was God's man at that time for that situation, then it was necessary because I think he had been maybe in so many words grafted into that.
Mm-hmm.
If he wasn't already grafted into it, he would have been grafted in at that time to Israel's hope.
Yep.
But then on down the road, we realize and understand that didn't last for a great long time in his lifetime because it went. There was others that were grafted in also. So, yeah. But
well, it seems weird. You go along, and we know this. We know Paul is telling them that Christ is the end of the law to them that believeth.
Yeah.
And yet he turns around and does one of the most ceremoniously lawful things that a Jew can do. I think, and to take that vow of the Nazarene.
Oh yeah. So. Amen.
Got to be an explanation for it. Yeah. I think he was trying to sell himself as a Jew of the Jews, so that they would. He said, "To a Jew, I become as a Jew.
Yeah.
To the weak, I'm weak. You know, whatever you need me to be, I'll be."
Yeah. Well, that's when you receive a vision from God and God speaks to you.
He was willing to do anything. He was willing to do whatever it took to get the message of Christ out, to get the people to listen. Well,
God didn't speak many people mouth, exactly. You know, like that. Yeah. So, only a few. Moses was one.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Paul
was one of the others, yeah.
Yeah. it wasn't a normal thing that took place there where all this was going on, because it was like when he shaved his head, he was part of the holy ground there himself at that point. So thank you for being with us.